Hey there, I'm an animated Connor Walsh, which is kind of ironic because people say I'm pretty animated in real life. Anyway, welcome to Walsh Wednesday, my new slash old podcast. Let me explain. Back in high school in 2013, I was pressured by some friends to do an impromptu solo acoustic performance in my cafeteria. Believe it or not, people really took to it. And it turned into a monthly musical series I did through the rest of high school. Who said High School Musical wasn't realistic? By college, I turned Walsh Wednesday into a web series, focusing on interviews surrounding community events, charities, and local entertainment in the Hudson Valley and Capital Regions of New York. Walsh Wednesday spawned several spin-offs such as the Walsh Wednesday Concert Series, Walsh Wednesday Spotlights, and Walsh Wednesday The Reflective Series before its hiatus in 2021. After that, I spent the last 3 years working in radio, honing my craft, conducting unbelievable interviews, traveling to fascinating places, attending mind-blowing events, and meeting some of my personal heroes. Now, with the help of some awesome people I've met along the way, I'm bringing Walsh Wednesday back bigger and better than ever. Let's stay curious, keep an open mind, and as always, I'm glad we get to spend some time. Welcome to Walsh Wednesday. On this week's episode of Walsh Wednesday, we have the return of musician Kat Ridgway. She's going to be performing at Berlin in New York City on Thursday, May 8th. After that, we have... wait, more Kat Ridgway? Yes, we are going behind the scenes with Kat Ridgway. More on that in a little bit. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon. This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by Impact PR and Communications, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Dayrock, Foam and Wash Car Wash, and Walsh Valuation. Hey there, and welcome to Walsh Wednesday. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, and I am so excited to have our guest here returning. The last time that we spoke to her a couple of months ago, she said that she would inform us the next time that she's in New York. She has kept her promise. She's going to be playing at Berlin in New York City. That is a club. She is not going over to Germany or anything. That is a club. She's going to be playing at Berlin in New York City on May 8th. She released her album Sprinter on March 28th. If you haven't checked it out yet, what the heck are you doing? I've listened to it several times now, and just so many great things. She and I have been talking for the last half hour trying to start this interview, but a little unsuccessful, but that's when you know you got a good guest with you. So with us today, we have musician Kat Ridgway. Kat, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing great. I love doing the introduction as if we haven't been talking for so long.
I know.
But now that we're officially into it, we can kind of like, all right, now that the intro's done, let's go back to what we were doing before. But either way, I'm excited about the show there on May 8th. I'm really excited to take the train down to see you, see the band, see everything going on. Of course, Sprinter, I was telling you before, I've listened to it like a couple times, fully in succession, a few songs here or there, but like great, great stuff. But before we like get into the meat and bones, I just got to say, as much as I'm loving it, you have a huge new fan in my dad. Loves your stuff. Yes.
Oh my God. Thank you.
Because it's really funny. He listened to your first interview.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know what? I'm really curious. So he found your YouTube channel, but then dad does this crazy thing of finding stuff like so out of pocket that are of multiple artists. So he's found you like radio shows or people with just cell phone footage of a show of yours or whatever. And he's just finding all these things and he's finding all these rabbit holes. And I'm like, how are you doing this, Dad? Like, how? But like, I got to say, the stuff that I'm hearing, like I'm in the kitchen and he's working at his office. The stuff sounded great. He's gone on a whole binge of your stuff. So Terry
That's
Walsh,
awesome.
Number one fan of Kat Ridgway.
Thank you so much. That's so cool.
Yeah, no, he's been eating all of it up. Absolutely.
That's awesome.
Yep. So no matter what you do in your career, just know that you have a 60-something-year-old man listening to your music at his office.
Heck yeah, and it's not my own dad. I love that.
Yep. No, he was saying, my dad was joking around, like, if you noticed a spike in all your views and listens, majority of it had probably been him.
That is hysterical. Wow. Please tell him thank you for me. That's really
Absolutely.
cool. I really appreciate that.
Hand clap Terry Walsh. Hand clap Terry Walsh. Very good. But of course, you have the new album out. You're doing some phenomenal things. You are going on tour. The fact that you're going to be here in New York City, I'm so excited to see you in person, see the band and everything.
Likewise.
Let's talk about the music though that you're going to be playing. Sprinter album, it's finally out. Last time we were talking about it, it was before everything came out. I'd only heard the singles. It's really
Yeah.
cool to hear everything in succession and hear the entire project come together. First, before I hear about like your reaction to getting out into the world, what reaction have you gotten from fans new and old?
It's just been amazing. I have to say, like, I don't want to use the word scared, but it definitely felt like I was taking a pretty huge step in a different direction. And I was wondering how it was going to be received by people who had been keeping up with me for a while. And the reception has been so awesome and very warm. And yeah, I'm super grateful that folks, especially here in my hometown, are along for the ride with the artistic journey, which is always growing and evolving. It's not making the same record a bunch of times over. So it's really nice to feel that I have the freedom to do that and branch out and have arms to fall into.
Now, when it comes to your music prior, like what would you describe the style of it prior to this album, and what would you describe where you've landed currently?
Yeah, so the older stuff I would say is kind of more in the Americana vein. It definitely still had undercurrents of indie rock and alternative sounds to it, but stylistically, it definitely felt a little bit safer, I guess would be the word. This record to me feels a lot more adventurous, and I definitely can hear a lot more of my indie alternative influences on it. I would describe it more as an indie alt record with, again, undercurrents of probably some folk and punk in there sprinkled throughout. But yeah, I mean, I love everything that I've made, but this one's my favorite.
That's awesome, though. It was funny because I was talking to my dad about this because he's your number one fan. And it was right after I saw A Complete Unknown, and listening to some of your older stuff and listening to some of your newer stuff kind of gives me the sense of like, Dylan Goes Electric, you know?
Yes. I just watched that like 2 days ago.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, and actually during those scenes when everyone around him is like, "Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that?" And they're kind of telling him what he's expected to do, and he's just like, "No." Like, just no.
I'm
And he
just going
just
to do
does
it.
what he does what he wants, and then because he did what he actually felt called to do as an artist, people received him in a completely new and much more enthusiastic way than even before when he was already in a good place. And that is, I couldn't help but feel like, dang, I know exactly what that feels like. I couldn't help but kind of compare my situation to it when I was watching it, because I was like, I know how that feels to have people tell you, "Hey, I don't think you should branch out like that. And I don't know if that's a good idea," and blah, 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 blah. But you just got to stick to your guns. That's literally what being an artist is challenging people
No,
and making the
absolutely.
art you want to make.
You don't want to be put into a box. Like, what kind of artist wants to just, be pigeonholed and everything?
Yeah.
And one thing that I felt about, Dylan Goes Electric, that whole time period, obviously the 60s were a much different time period when it comes to music, and you listen to the things that were pushing the boundaries back then are like, oh,
Yeah.
that's pretty tame today. But
Yeah.
back then it really wasn't. It was revolutionary, and I kind of forget that sometimes. When I listen to Highway 61 Revisited and stuff after that point, I'm thinking it's like it just sounds like Bob Dylan with a full band. It just sounds like the natural progression in my mind. And
Totally.
I feel like that's also very similar when I listen to Sprinter, because I heard a lot of your kind of more Americana poetic roots in the lyrics, but then you were able to experiment with the full band and get this bigger sound. It's
Yeah.
like, sure, it's this bigger sound and everything, but the heart of it, like, Cat's still there. Like, Cat
Yeah,
never
totally.
disappeared. That's what I got out of it.
Thank you. And it's kind of funny to me too, because I know we kind of touched on this last time we spoke, but when I go through old demos of stuff that I made when I was in high school, like this is more what it sounded like. And so the stuff that I put out that was kind of more in the Americana vein, I'm very proud of it, and I'm really happy that I got to work with all the people I got to work with, because I learned a ton working with different people and people who had different styles than me. But this is the first time I've put something out where I truly do feel like I sound like myself. And it's so evident when I listen back to stuff I was making 10 plus years ago. And it sounds like it could be on this record, you know?
Well, something 10 plus years ago is on this record. We talked about it last time with Posture, and I told you before we got on, officially onto the mic, how that it, I know it's the last song, but based on our conversation last time, I had to listen to it first, and it was a great experience. And then as immediately after listening to it first, I went back from the beginning, listened in succession, ended with it, and it's like, yeah, this hits. This hits. No, it's a great ending song, but
Thank you.
now the fact, obviously, when we were talking about it before, people were yet to hear it. Have people commented on that?
Actually, especially people who have heard the story behind that song. I've had a handful of people reach out and be like, dude, that's cool. And I even have a friend who's dealt with like respiratory issues for the last couple of years, and she was just like, the fact that you cough at the end of that is like the most she was like, that really connected with me personally. And I was like, that's actually funny to me, because I was just coughing my ass off because Mike, my co-producer, had a cat in his studio.
Oh no, you're allergic.
And I'm super allergic to cats. And anyway, so
Ironic cat.
I know. And like, so that's why I was coughing. But then when we got to the editing process, Mike was like, you know, there's something about you coughing in this that I actually really like, because it sounds like you're fragile or something's bothering you, like on a physical sense, like on a physical level. And I was like, that's very interesting. He's like, it's oddly poetic and I want to keep it. And I was like, all right, cool. And like, I kept thinking about, there's an interview with Jack Antonoff after he worked with Lana Del Rey, and he said, as a producer, getting the music to sound right is only half the job. The other half is capturing the whole essence of the person who's in the booth. And so he kept snippets of Lana talking and stuff in between takes. And I was like, oh man, I guess my essence is just coughing when there's a cat around.
I think it's more than that. As I'm listening to it, I'm thinking it's like, oh, they kept in some behind the scenes stuff. They, the takes and in between, which it is, but that's really interesting to hear the rest of the story. It's like you're dying because of a cat.
And you know what's really funny too is like all over this record, this was an ongoing conversation that Mike and I had over the course of a few months, where I was like, should we replace these vocals? Should we replace those vocals? And a ton of the scratch vocals on this album were me sick because of the cat, and the first time I came up there, I had a sinus infection. But he was like, I don't know how to explain this, but sometimes the demo scratch vocal just has this energy. And he's like, I think if we don't use it as the lead vocal, it should at least be a double. And so, and I had already said that I wanted a huge sound of this album to be doubled vocals. Like, that's a sound I've always loved, and I wanted it everywhere. And so there are quite a handful of moments when I listen back to the record, I could literally hear my nose like sounding like this, and like the way I'm enunciating sounds kind of funny to me. But when we went back and tried to retrack the vocal, he was totally right. Like, the energy was just different. And so anyway, I'm like kind of sort of sick and allergic to a cat for the majority of this album.
Jesus. But it's funny though, because you're right. How many times either myself, people I worked with, or people who like I revere, many times that initial take, that scratch take, there is something about it. I think it's because as artists, we're less in our own heads about it.
Because you don't care yet. You're not trying yet. You know you're gonna try later. So why try now?
But then when you start trying, it's like, Oh, this is like, where's the rawness? Where's the
Yeah, and
essence? Where's
it's
the
too
fun?
sterile.
Yeah, and it's just not the same. But that's funny. See, I wouldn't have gotten like sick or cat allergies from listening to the album. So I hope that's at least a little bit of solace to you to know it's like,
Thank you, thank you. I was
yep.
using a neti pot every morning.
God. Oh, that's a great
No,
image to
seriously, like
have.
my routine, Mike would get up and start making like breakfast and stuff, and I would just have water in a pot boiling so I could shove it up my nose. Like,
So it's like, ah, oh, am I going to be able to sing today? Let's see.
yeah, no, seriously, because there were a couple times where I was like, I don't know, man. And then we'd end up like tracking guitars or something instead. But yeah, for the most part, it worked out. And then there were some vocals that I actually tracked. My studio's actually like right
Oh, there
there.
we go.
So when I would come back home between the trips to Asheville, there were a handful of vocals that I did have to do here because I was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to get this the way I want to do it and like belt with enough power while I'm dealing with the cat and stuff. So, and I love his cat too, honestly.
Oh,
Like, I really love that cat. It's like the only
yeah.
cat I've ever been like, I would own that cat.
If you wouldn't die
Clearly.
from owning it, yeah. What a
Yeah.
shame.
It's hilarious though, because Cursive, which is probably the biggest song vocally on the whole record,
That
I
was impressive. I loved like just
thank
the
you.
wall of sound on that.
Oh, I love how big it is. Dude,
Yeah.
I like all I wanted was for it to sound like a freaking tsunami. And it was so awesome when we got into the mixing process with that song. Dan Milan, the drummer from Lucius, he's the one that did the mixing on this record, and he 180'd that song. So when we tracked this, we started with like that little banjola and banjo loop thing that's in the very beginning that sounds kind of ethereal. And we had that, and then we built it like a normal song, you know, where like the bass was down here and the drums, and then everything else that was sparkly and light and airy was on top. So we sent it all the files over to Dan, and he, instead of keeping it like this, he just goes, and so he put the bass out front
Huh.
way louder than everything else, and all the overtones just bled all over everything, and it just made it so much grungier and edgier and bigger. And I just remember, like, me and Mike looked at each other when we heard that mix for the first time, and we were like, oh my God, that's so much cooler! Like, that's so much cooler. Why didn't
That's
we do that?
awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think it just really goes to show you, like, the spirit of collaboration is so beautiful when you really do, like, just not interfere and let everyone bring what they're going to bring to the table. So I never would have thought to do that. I don't think Mike would have either. And the fact that Dan did it, and then me and Mike were both like, hell yeah, brother. Like, it's so cool.
That is so cool. Yeah, I don't think I would have thought of doing that either, but I might have to try that for a track or two. Jeez,
Yeah, man.
that's
And
neat.
also just a testament to Mike's tone sculpting skills, though, because if the bass tone hadn't been good enough to pull that off, it wouldn't have worked like it did. So it was like they really locked in and met each other halfway on that. Man, what a cool sound. And yeah, Dan just crushed it getting it to sound like the speakers are about to blow when it really comes in full throttle. And that's one of my favorites on the whole album.
That's awesome. No, it came out great. Yeah, no, I just remember the first time listening to it. It just felt very immersive. It felt for the sake of there was literally nowhere else for me to go. I'm just surrounded by the sound. So,
That's
no,
awesome.
it came out great sonically. And let's talk about another form of collaboration right now. Obviously, you had the collaboration with everything on the album, and again, everything came out so well. But the collaboration with your fans and the community that you are fostering, one of the big things that you had recently, you actually just launched it right after we talked the first time. So we didn't get a chance to talk about it the first time, but the Kickstarter for Sprinter. And you had a goal of $15,000. You were interacting with fans on social media. You're probably doing a lot more than that didn't see. You killed it. You
Thank
killed
you.
it. You had $17,800. Amazing. What was this experience like? I'm sure like fun, but I'm sure also nerve-wracking
Oh my
to a
God,
degree too.
it was so stressful, but also like, gosh, just like you asking that question, I'm like about to tear up again because I just felt like so supported by everybody who has ever cared about what I was doing. And if people didn't help art get made and support it like this, there's no way we would have half the art that we have. And there's no way I would still be able to do this. This is actually the second crowdfunding campaign I've ever done. But the first one was a third of what we were trying to raise. So to see how much growth I've had in the time frame between those two campaigns was crazy. But then also just to see the support that came out around this record was insane, especially being out in Colorado at the time when it was live. To not be home and see so many names that I recognized, and then a ton that I didn't recognize. Like, it's equally as cool. Like, it's awesome to see people that you know and love support something. It feels very like warm and fuzzy, but then it's like so sick to see a bunch of new people come into your sphere as well through a project that means a lot to you. So, yeah, it was a lot of work, but it really paid off, and I honestly still don't think people realize how much this has helped get this record out into the world. Because of all of this, I've been able to tour more cities. I've been able to get the record out on radio, and actually the last single, the first single that we pushed to radio, it's called What If. That one
Such a good
actually,
song. Such a
thank
good
you.
song. Yeah.
Yeah, that tune actually just hit number one last week on the AAA Surging and Emerging chart, which is a chart that measures how much momentum a song has in the AAA world. And that is, I've never been number one on anything like that before. And the week before, we had moved up from number eight to number five, and we were just above Bon Iver, which is one of my favorite bands and biggest influences of forever, like forever. And I can't believe that I'm in the conversation as a lot of these people that I grew up listening to and really adore. So it's changed a lot. It's given me a lot of opportunity. It's opened a lot of doors and also just made me feel like I'm really doing something right if that many people care at all. So,
No, I'm
yeah.
sure that, first of all, congratulations on
Thank
all of it,
you.
from the charts to everybody supporting. I found it super inspirational just seeing the journey happen, and I'm glad that things were able to really work out for you. I want to talk about a lot of the logistics and some of like the incentives you had or the social media aspect that you had. But before we
Yeah.
get into that, though, there was a point that you made that we talked about the last time you were here on Welsh Wednesday, specifically with the 30A Festival. The very first time you were
Yeah.
there at the 30A Festival, nobody was there to see you. You were just there with the collaborators. But then this year, people are there for you. You're headlining, and you were talking about just, wow, the amount of growth and change that's happened over these years.
Yeah.
Let's take that same sentiment and throw it towards this. The first crowdfunding you said was a third of what you were going
Yeah.
for this time. And then you have this. Not only is it three times larger, you surpassed it and you've really done incredible work. Do you feel similar to that same sentiment about 30A?
Yeah, it's I mean it does it's it hits in a similar place. This is, well, I don't know. I was gonna say this is a little more tangible just 'cause there's numbers involved and metrics, and I like numbers. I like being able to dive into stuff like that. But it's also tangible when you see a whole room be full of people versus it not being full of people.
You can tell. You can normally tell when it's an empty
Yeah.
room. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I do think though, if people are willing to invest in a project with you and in terms of like finances, that like even if it's like $5 or something, that is probably the truest marker of someone who's locked in with you. If someone's willing to open up their wallet to help you, that's like they believe in what you're doing. And that is the thing that kept blowing my mind. was the fact that there were over 200 people who contributed to this thing. And that's just the people who were able to right now. I'm sure there are tons of people who just shared it because that maybe was what they were capable of in the time that it was alive. And it all adds up. But I mean, just the fact that that people are invested enough to contribute in that way speaks volumes. Same thing goes for like a ticket though, because like if you buy a ticket, same thing. So yeah, I guess it kind of is the same but different. I want to say it's like an apples and oranges situation, but it's like if they tasted more similar.
We'll take it. We'll take it. No, but
Yeah.
that's great though. And you're right. It is a huge marker when it comes to, engaging with an audience, who's locked in with you, how things are going to go. But this is more than just, hey, I put out this Kickstarter. Please donate to it. And you share once. And then it is far from that. I saw the work that you put into this from at least a social media standpoint. You're updating every day. You're offering incentives. You have a number of things that you're doing to interact with your audience while building this. And I think it's something that a number of artists, a lot of independent artists, growing artists, people that I went to college, music school with, unfortunately, a lot of creatives don't necessarily quite see or realize it's much of a big deal as it is. You can be the greatest at whatever you do, but if you don't put the legwork in, you're not going to get anywhere with it. You put in the legwork. So, do
Thank
you
you.
mind going into the steps that you took to make this Kickstarter a success?
Yeah, so I think one thing that a lot of people kind of miss with Kickstarters is that there are a million different records that are trying to be made every single day. So, what is the thing that makes yours different? What's different about you as an artist? What's different about the group of people you're working with? If you can answer those questions, boom, guess what? You have a story. Storytelling is what this is. Whether it's in the song, whether it's in the record, whether it's in an interview, whatever it is, if you have a story, you have something for people to connect with. Because either they're going to see themselves in you, or they're going to see something that they can be a part of. So for me, my biggest thing was that, I have all these opportunities right now to work with this team for the first time. And basically, I mean, at least in my mind, I was hoping to have people feel like they were joining that team by being part of this, because they were. And they are. So, I think the biggest thing I see a lot of people kind of accidentally skip over is having the story instead of just being like, hey, my band and I are putting out this record. It means a lot to us. Thanks. Why? Why do I care about that record? What, like, are you working with someone cool? Is there an organization that you're working with behind it? Is like, what is it about this record that makes you care? Like, it's cool to care. It's so punk to care. Like, but what do you care about? And like, if you can give other people that thing to care about with you, boom, now you're united and you're going in the same direction. Like, so that's I think the biggest thing. Aside from that, I think just having clear goals and updating people too. Like, if people don't know where the project is standing, and if they also don't know the stakes that are involved. Like, if you're doing specifically a Kickstarter, there's a time frame, and if you don't hit the goal 100% within that time frame, you don't get any of it.
That's
Which
scary.
also,
That's
it's very
so
scary.
scary.
But I like to gamble. I'm kidding, I'm kidding. It was a calculated risk. There were a lot of equations that I was doing in the background. There were a lot of social media strategy planning that I th like there were schedules I was putting together in the background. I was actually using ChatGPT kind of for the first time, like religiously. Like every day I'd update it and tell it where we were with our goal and ask it like what it thought I should do next to keep the momentum moving forward. And Also had a marketing strategy going on with our email list, and we were running Facebook ads just to keep it in front of people, because a lot of the time too, people will decide to jump in after they've seen the story or heard about the campaign multiple times.
It's object permanence. It's a matter of object permanence. The more it's around you, the more it's like they'll actually remember it's a thing.
And sometimes, I mean, I think our frequency was upwards of like 4 to 6 impressions before a single person would like take action on the record. And
Four to
so
six
the point,
impressions. That's actually a decent ratio, though.
it's pretty good for something like this, but it's like that's still like up to 6 times it took for someone to see the same ad before they actually jumped in and got a record or whatever it was that they did. And then you also definitely have folks who will wait until the last like 24 hours because they want to know, is this going to fund? Does it look likely? Okay, now I'll jump in, kind of thing. The arc that's very common to see for crowdfunding kind of looks like this.
I think I have an idea of what you're going to draw already. I'm very curious. Hold on, hold on. I'm going to draw something on my own. See if it's similar. Let's see.
Like, oh wait, I need to start over. That wasn't a good, wasn't a good. I need to like, I'm trying to remember like what it looked like from the analytics side, but it's like,
You're all good. Three, two, one. Oh, damn. Very similar.
Okay,
Holy
so
cow.
typically when you start, you'll have like a really good bump and then you kind of coast, and this is the threshold of panic. And this part sucks. I don't care who you are, this part is hard.
The
And then
threshold of
like,
panic is real.
and then all of a sudden you'll just kind of whoop, and that's typically, it's like an S curve kind of sorta. That's
I
usually,
love how similar it really was. That's
yeah, no,
impressive.
you nailed that. And so yeah, that's pretty much what'll happen. That's a trend. And the more you can set yourself up for success, hey buddy, it's like you're getting it wrong.
Wilson,
Listen,
tell us what's going on.
basically, if you can get up to, depending on how long your campaign is, the sweet spot's usually around 30 days. You don't usually want to go too much above that. I know Kickstarter gives you the option to extend up to 60. That's not actually super ideal because people get fatigued, and it also is just it's just too long to be promoting something, at least in the music sphere. If you're a business offering a product, that's kind of a different scenario altogether. But in terms of music, I personally wouldn't recommend going above 30 days. And that also keeps the excitement and enthusiasm at a good level for the whole time instead of people kind of tapering off at the end.
I
So,
agree.
yeah. What was like, oh yeah. So if you can hit the first like 25-ish percent of your goal within that first week, if you're doing like a month-long campaign, you're setting yourself up for a very good campaign. And I think it's something like 70 or 80% of the time, if you hit 25% within the first week, you're like 70 to 80% likely to not just fund your project, but overfund your project.
That's pretty
It's
solid.
a pretty crazy metric to be able to have that soon into a campaign, but that is actually known data, which is really wild.
That is wild. I think that's actually very interesting and something I'll definitely keep in mind more when I do the same. Something that I really want to revisit, a reason to care in the story, something that you've seen that a number of musicians or artists or really anybody will skip out on, sometimes on purpose, sometimes inadvertently. One of the things I really want to talk about that is the amount of vulnerability that goes into it, the amount of emotional maturity that goes into that, and also sometimes the person is like, "Huh, why do I care?" Like, have you ever sat down with yourself and you're trying to figure out why X is different than everything else, and you're like, "I don't even know the answers." Like, Just because I like it is not a good enough answer. There is an answer, but it's a matter of finding it.
Yeah.
It can be so tough for a lot of people. So as somebody who's gone out and done it and really shown your story, shown that vulnerability and figured out your why, what would you say to other artists who are trying to understand their why?
That's a good question. What I would start with is saying, what excites you about what you're doing? If I had you boil down the project that you're working on to three main things that you were pumped about, what are the three first things you're going to tell your best friend about this project over a beer when they ask you what you're working on? Dive into those three things, figure out what ties them together, let that kind of guide you and see if you can direct it somewhere else. Also, just like from a marketing perspective, fun fact, my degree is in advertising and public relations.
There you go.
Yeah. And so one of the things that they teach you, I'm going to Google this real quick off to the side here just to make sure I remember this correctly. Like the key marketing motivators. Yeah. The four main motivators are pleasure, acceptance, aspiration, and fear. So pleasure, positioning your product as enjoyable to those making consumers feel good. Acceptance is like influencer marketing, making people feel like they're part of a community. Aspiration, highlighting how your project can help achieve goals. I would also say here in the aspiration sector, I think as a musician, if you can also inspire other musicians to aspire to whatever you're trying to do, you've also tapped into this in a different way.
Yeah.
And then fear, I'm not a big fan of using this one in an artistic, or in any case, honestly, but like, especially in an artistic one. Fear, it's stressing how your product deals with the dominant fear of your targets. I'm not really keen on that. I think that's a manipulative way to.
I agree. At first,
yeah.
Face value, I agree.
Yeah.
But I think there can be still a positive spin on fear. Take the Kickstarter, for example, how you said it's within a certain amount of time. And if you don't get it within that amount of time, you're not going to get it.
That is such a
great
point.
That could be the fear.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be instilling fear on other people. It doesn't have to be fear mongering, but just that fear could also be
stakes
translated to stakes, a call to action within a certain time period. So that could be a positive way of looking at fear.
Totally. I totally agree with that. But yeah, like, so from those perspectives though, those four main motivators, going back to that list of three things that you would be excited about with your project, where do those three things fall within that second list of motivators, and try to figure out, okay, where's the story between all of this? And I think that's kind of where I would start. For me, I just knew the most exciting thing that I had was that I had just signed this distribution deal with Sony. And I knew the thing about that though was no one knew what that meant unless I spelled it out. So that's kind of what my project was centered around, because it was the most exciting thing that I had going on around this record. And it also set the record up for success prior to us even funding it from the jump, you know, because it was like, whether or not we get the funding, like, this team's here and they're locked and loaded in place. So if you want to help that and join this thing, the door is wide open for you to walk through. And so I think if you can find a sense of community and belonging for people to join into, to kind of rally behind the project and find your story, those are, I think, the things that are going to help set you up for success.
I agree.
And also having a good understanding of your audience and how to talk to them.
Big time. Big time. This is so random, but this reminds me of an old cartoon that I saw. It was a comic strip in a Disney magazine. It was Mickey and Goofy. Yeah. And Mickey is saying to Goofy, it's like, the three things about starting a business are location, location, location. And the next panel is Goofy with a lemonade stand in the middle of a snowstorm. And it's like,
I guess also timing and audience makes a big difference too.
That's awesome.
And I remember that very.
Featuring like a lemonade stand in Vail now.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, no, it was like that. But again, it's a matter of like knowing where and knowing who you're surrounded by. It makes a big difference. But no,
Yeah.
that's huge,
Oh,
Kat.
timing is huge too,
Timing.
because we had talked about launching this thing back in like November, October, November of last year. And
Oh wow.
it's like, well, now we're up against the holiday season. That's a terrible time to fundraise for anything. Like, there's also
Anything
research
non-holiday
on
related.
this. Yeah, and it's
Yeah.
like, okay, well, let's get out of the holiday season and make sure we're fully out of the holiday season before we do this. So that's why we ended up kind of like gearing everything toward the springtime, but then it just happened to line up with the album release once we got all of the dates set as a team. And it was like, oh, well, this actually could kind of be part of the album rollout. So I was trying to also view the Kickstarter as a promotional tool us alongside putting the album out rather than just having it be like, hey, can you help us pay for stuff? That's not a great way to frame something, you know?
No, it's interesting because I figured it was way more intentional. It seemed way more intentional, the fact that it was
Yeah,
going on
no, that
all at
was
the same time.
very happy accident,
Nice,
honestly. But
nice.
then once I realized like, oh shoot, the time frame could line up with the album release, then we did intentionally plan it that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, initially we were trying to have the crowdfunding stuff kind of before the
Huh.
album release.
Okay.
But I mean, that's why I go out to Colorado though, is because playing all the type of residency gigs that I do out there, I'm able to keep up with the costs of everything. But bringing the team on and putting an album out, it was just, I got hit with a lot of expenses all at the same time. And I kept up as long as I possibly could. And then I was like, well, I think now is the time to accept help if people want to give it.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is like, there's this kind of misconception I think a lot of musicians and creatives have where they feel like putting a crowdfunding campaign feels like a charity case, or like it feels like almost admitting defeat, like that they couldn't keep up with something. And it's like, no, actually, at least in my particular circumstance, this was a victory because now I have things and opportunities that I need help to achieve because we've gotten to the point where they're necessary to have. Like, we've grown to this place where now there is a booking agent and there is a label team and there is a marketing team and there are all these people involved. And it's like, if nothing exciting was happening, these other people wouldn't be here, you know?
Yeah, big
And
time.
so, and again, this all ties into the story because it's like, I think, again, so many people view it as like, you know, a charity thing, and it's like, no, dude, like this is a business, and people will buy a product, people will invest in a business and help a startup company, and this is the same thing. It's the same exact thing. And yeah, anyway, that's my two cents on that, because I even had to battle that a little bit, like just planning it here, like talking with some of my family and stuff. They're like, are you sure you want to do that? Are you sure you want, like, with the PR of it? And it's like, no, this is an opportunity for people to be a part of the record
Yes.
from the foundation, you know, not just like, oh, I'll buy it when it's out, cool. It's like, no, that now they're part of the process and they're way more invested in it now than they probably would have been if I just put it out,
Yeah.
you know.
Like to give somebody that feeling of being an investor, you know, that like makes them feel important. It's
Yeah.
like exactly. So it makes such a big difference. And I love the way that you look at things about getting people on board and getting people invested, getting people collaborating, putting some stakes to it. That is
Yeah.
huge, huge, huge,
Thank
huge when it
you.
comes to getting stuff out. And honestly, that time that you spend as a marketing major, I think that definitely paid off for you. I think some good things on that.
Thank you. I've had a lot of help. I've had a lot of
I'm
help,
sure.
though. Yeah.
And I think that's the last thing that I want to bring up before we completely wrap this up. help, accepting help. A lot of what we've been talking about already is the acceptance of help, that vulnerability, finding the right people to open up with, whether that's in the form of collaboration in the studio and letting somebody come forward to do their thing, have free reign and let something beautiful happen, or it can be the help of having your fans, your crowd, your friends, your family come in and be a part of this with you. So many creators, not just creators, so many people in general think that they have to go it alone.
Mm-hmm.
Or it can only get done, like, what's the phrase? It's like, if you want it done right, do it yourself. There's
right.
that phrase.
Yeah.
But that can really be hurtful.
Yeah.
So what would you say as an opposition to that phrase? If you want something done right, do it yourself. What's your opposition to that?
I would say just find the people you trust, because you don't want to just bring anybody onto a team. But if you find the right people and you get a good divide and conquer strategy with people you really think are good at their craft, you are so unstoppable at that point, because if you let everybody work to their strengths on every aspect of a project, this is why you have a producer and a mixing engineer and a mastering engineer instead of doing all of that yourself. No shade to people who do. There are people who can and do a very good job with it, but
it's exhausting. It's exhausting.
As an example though, like having different people do their thing when it's all necessary to get to the end goal, that is going to give you so much of a stronger final product. Not to mention that it's just more creatively fulfilling when you're able to collaborate with people, I think. Now, I mean, the flip side to that though, is it can be really expensive to bring people into the fold and have individualized assassins, if you will.
I like it.
You know, like that can get expensive. And so I would just say be strategic with the people you put in place. And I would say prioritize the things that you want done really well, and do those things first. And then being a jack of all trades will eventually really pay off, because then when you do bring the people onto your team who do those things, you know if they're doing a good job because you used to do it yourself.
Yes. So, yeah. Funny enough, with jack of all trades, we had TJ Burns, who's another musician and producer, and we were talking about the expression. He didn't know the second half of the phrase. Are you familiar with the full phrase? Jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah.
But did you know the other half of it? But oftentimes better than a master of one.
This is true.
See, nobody knows the second half.
I like that.
Nobody knows the second half. That's funny. One day I will have a guest here on Walsh Wednesday that knows the full quote.
I feel like I have heard that in passing, but it wasn't like in my brain.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's good to have a background with all of the things. And I would say too, like to counter the how expensive everything can get, if you can find somebody on a similar journey as you, where you can trade skills back and forth, that is a very valuable thing to be able to do.
Sweat equity and human capital are huge. It doesn't have to be cash. There's a way to be able to mutually benefit each other in various ways based on your skills, just like you just said. Amazing. Yeah. Absolutely. No, I agree. Kat, this has been an incredible interview from start to finish. And when I mean I do mean start of all the nonsense.
I love it.
I'm going to figure out a way to incorporate everything from this entire time. I swear to you. But we do got to wrap up, though. Again, make sure that you check out Kat Ridgway. She's playing at Berlin in New York City. That's going to be on, I believe it's a Thursday. It's May 8th. I know it's definitely May 8th. I should have checked that ahead of time. Thursday, May 8th, Berlin. They're in New York City. So very close to me. So I'm taking the train down. So you know I'll be there. So if you recognize me, say hi. But check her out. check out Sprinter. It is such a great album. It is doing great things. Kat's doing great things overall. I'm really excited to see where her musical journey takes her. And Kat, you know that you are very much welcome here on Walsh Wednesday. We joked earlier having a spin-off segment of Kat and Connor. Walsh Wednesday presents
yeah,
Kat and Connor.
Call me.
we might just end up having to do that at some point. But seriously, Kat, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back. I really appreciate it.
I'm Connor.
I'm Kat. This is Wilson.
And as always, we're glad we get to
spend some time.
Good boy, Wilson. I'm the ad ref, calling a timeout on this week's episode to tell you about our sponsors.
Baseball has umps, you idiot.
I don't have an umpire outfit, okay? Sue me. Hey there, I'm the ad ref, calling a timeout on this week's episode to tell you about our sponsors. Now on deck, we got Foam and Wash Car Wash. Hey there, I'm Connor, and this is my car.
My eye!
Kidding, it's not that bad, but I do really need a car wash though. Did you know that the spring is one of the busiest times for car washes? It's because everybody's washing off all of the winter grime along with the new spring pollen. Introducing the Wash Wednesday Fundraiser. And no, that is not a typo. Walsh Wednesday is partnering up with Foam and Wash Car Wash. With 12 convenient locations within the Hudson Valley, Foam and Wash Car Wash is a local family business born in the 1960s, specializing in fast and convenient services in first-class facilities with friendly and courteous staff. By going to the Wash Wednesday fundraiser link, which you can find on screen or in the description of this episode, you can purchase the ticket for a ceramic wash or a hot wax that can be redeemed and used at any of their 12 locations. A portion of those proceeds helps to benefit the Walsh Wednesday podcast in supporting local arts and local businesses. The fundraiser goes until Thursday, May 15th. Thanks for the support and happy washing. Next up to the plate, we have our friend Philomena Finelli from Impact PR and Communications. Philomena?
Thanks, Connor. I'm Philomena Finelli, CEO of Impact PR and Communications and a media maven, which is a fancy way of saying that my team and I help companies get in the news, transform leaders into thought leaders, and cut through the clutter with messaging that matters. And we do it all with a smile. Our agency was named the Woman-Owned Small Business of the Year for 2024 by the Metro New York District Office of the U.S. Small Business Administration, and we received the Gold Stevie Award for Women-Run Workplace of the Year, which is an international recognition. But it's not about the awards, it's about the personal interactions. We at Impact PR and Communications pride ourselves on crafting meaningful, results-driven public relations campaigns that are tailored to meet and exceed our clients' goals. If you want to learn more and talk to my team and I, visit PRwithimpact.com and let us know that you found out about us from Walsh Wednesday. Now back to you, AdRef.
Thanks, Philomena. Lastly, we got a message from a very stylish young man here to talk to you about the Walsh Wednesday merch store. The Walsh Wednesday merch store is officially open. Now you can have my face on your body. That didn't come out right. When you visit the Walsh Wednesday merch store, you can select from hats, t-shirts, hoodies, stickers, and more. By purchasing some Walsh Wednesday merchandise, you're not only supporting this program, but you're also supporting the local arts and organizations that are featured. Just visit cmjwentertainment.com/shop-merch and use promo code REVIVAL for 20% off. All links are in the description. I decided to work with Teespring for my merch store because, well, I was already buying from them. They have comfortable and durable products, and their printing is clear and reliable. One of my favorite hoodies is from my friend's Teespring collection, Offbeat Threads. To learn how to start your own online collection, visit teespring.com. And of course, I hope you get to spend some time at the Walsh Wednesday merch store. Thanks, guys. That's enough out of me. Play ball. Hey there. Welcome back. So when we record Walsh Wednesday, most of the times we just sit down and get right into the interview, which is great. But other times, we capture some really fun, animated, energetic, hilarious bits before and after the official interview. When that happens, I like to post those behind-the-scenes clips on the Walsh Wednesday Patreon. For as low as $5 a month, you can be supporting the Walsh Wednesday Patreon and having access to some extra candid comedic content. Since my latest interview with Kat Ridgway included so much extra content, I wanted to show it to you here. Here's a sneak peek of what you're missing out on the Walsh Wednesday Patreon. Now, I didn't hit record right away, so we missed about 5 minutes of talking, but What you need to know is we were talking about Cat's Dog Wilson and the Tom Hanks movie Castaway. I think that's enough to get you into this. Here we go with the behind the scenes content.
I don't care. But no, that's hilarious.
I mean, I could do it again, you know?
Nah, it's all good. We want it to be authentic. No, but yeah. It was funny because I worked at a summer camp for years. And we had multiple different camps. And I just remember chilling in the cafe, which was upstairs, overlooking the fields that we had. We had an indoor turf. And it was volleyball camp that week. Absolutely. They had a whole bunch of it was a great setup. Had a whole bunch of volleyballs, of course. And then right in the corner, just one volleyball had the perfect handprint on it. And I'm like, oh my God. I try showing the kids and they're like, what is this? And it's like, y'all too young. Yeah. Y'all too young.
You didn't get it. You had to be there.
Hell, I would. God, when did that movie come out? I might have only been like two or three when that movie.
I don't know. I was just like, this was one. It was one of the movies that would be on a random channel.
Oh my God, AMC late at night, right?
Yeah, in the dead of summer, you're just like up till 1 a.m. with your sibling because what else is there to do? Yep. And Tom Hanks is on.
2000. So I was three. I was three when the movie came out.
Let's go.
But I've saw it so many times on reruns, just seeing it on TV. I feel like A&E, AMC, places like that had it all the time.
That's so funny.
Yeah. Wilson, I love that for your dog.
Me too. Yeah. No, every time we're saying his name, he's over here like, what?
It's like, what did I do? Mama, what did I do?
Hold on, I'll show you him one more time.
Yay! I love doggos.
I love this guy.
Hi, Wilson.
Hi. Oh, hey, you.
All the kisses.
He gives me all the kisses.
How old's he?
He just turned two.
Aw, still a little puppy.
Yeah, he's a little guy.
Aw.
He's a little baby. Hey, oh, thank you. Thank you. Aw.
So I'm curious, what's it like, though, like going out on the road and traveling, but having a dog? Like, takes care of
him. I miss him so much.
Yeah.
I really want to get him trained where I can take him on the road with us, but we haven't quite gotten there yet. I haven't been home long enough to get him trained to take him out. But when I'm out in Colorado doing the residency stuff, because I'm back in Florida now.
Okay.
Now there's palm trees.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. So now that I'm back in Florida, we've been kind of catching up, making up for some lost time, but he stays here year round with my parents because my dad works from home.
Oh, convenient.
And yeah. And so it's like, it's kind of, it would be selfish if I took him to Colorado with me because my work days are super long and he would be alone in an apartment or something, you know, and the alternative is he has my dad here to hang out with all day.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just, you know, so we haven't gotten there yet, but it is, That's the
goal.
Long ball.
Yeah. Plan. No. Makes sense. No. Sounds good. Because I've never had a pet, but I desperately would love a pet.
You should.
But the thing is, like, my schedule, I am so all over the place. If I am home, it's in front of the camera or running around like crazy. So.
Yeah.
So it is tough. While, like, my girlfriend, she's got, like, three cats.
Yeah.
And I know one day I'm going to be, you know, an adoptive pet cat dad.
Yeah.
I told her no more than two at a time, please. Because even though as much as I do love pets.
Yeah.
It's like, I know you want to adopt every single cat in the world. But come on, let's have a cap, please.
Like, yeah, no, I want like 12 dogs.
12 dogs.
I'm so serious. Like, the dream, I think, currently is to have enough land to have like 12 dogs and just vibe and have a little studio with all the dogs running around in the background. Like,
that'd be sick. That'd be sick.
Yeah.
So my girlfriend said if she gets enough money one day, she's going to buy a separate house just for cats and just have them there. That's what she wants to do one day. But what you were saying, have you ever watched How I Met Your Mother at all?
You know, I actually have not.
Okay. So the only reason why I bring it up, in the early seasons, Robin Scherbatsky had like 8 to 10 dogs in her apartment. Like, she just, like, tons of dogs.
Correct.
Yes.
Yes.
I think the only reason...
I should.
I think the only reason why they stopped that plot point was because one of the other leads actually was allergic to dogs, so they couldn't have him around all the dogs.
See, I'm super allergic to cats, so I'm just really? Like, I love that for your girlfriend. Yeah, I know. And LOL, yeah, my name's Kat with a C. I know.
That's ironic.
I never thought about it.
Oh, that's sad. Yeah.
No, I know. I love all animals, but I have to say, if I had to choose if I were going to be allergic to cats or dogs, I'm glad I am less allergic to dogs.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah, no, I love both. There's a reason to love both. There's pros and cons, whether you're more of a cat person or a dog person. I'm not going to be, you know, trying to pick sides or anything, but... my roommate in college, he's also allergic to cats.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We had a New Year's Eve party one time at another friend's house, and they had four cats at the time,
yeah.
I think.
Uh-huh.
So there was one room where, like, they always try to be good to make sure that nobody that none of the cats ever go down there to make sure
right.
It's all good.
That's the room I stay in.
There you go. Yeah, no, exactly.
At friends' places, yeah.
Yeah, so that's where we hung out, and that's where my roommate was. That's where he slept all night. Even still, my dude's eyes were as red as a stoplight.
Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, that's how I am, too. And there was one time, oh, my God, like on our very first stop on the tour, there's this adorable lady who I love, and she's like, oh, you're coming up into our neck of the woods, like, come stay with us, no problem. I'm like, oh, awesome, you know, we got four people in the band. She's like, no problem, we got places for everybody to sleep. We get there, I had no idea she had like five cats.
Oh.
And I had to sleep on top of the covers with an N95 on.
Wow.
And I woke up, it was so bad. And the next morning, my eyes were like totally bloodshot. I had lost part of my voice, and I just looked like I was sick.
Oh.
And the icing on the cake was we were stopping through a radio station, and we had to perform live on air at like 7 a.m. And so it was already just early. And then I wake up like I caught the plague overnight. And then after we get done, they're like, hey, so we recorded that performance. Is it cool if we release it? And I'm like, oh, my God.
It's like, no, please don't.
you know what, though? It actually didn't sound that bad. It felt way
worse
than it sounded.
There you go. Well, wait, hold on. Was it just the radio recording, or was there video at the same time too?
No, there was video and everything.
Oh!
Like, it was the whole shebang, dude. And I was just like, this is day one of the tour. I can't even imagine what else the road has in store for us if this is how we're starting. Like, geez, man.
That's
That was very rough.
Oh.
Yeah.
Damn, that is bad. No, I don't wish that upon anybody. Fortunately, I'm lucky enough where I do have very few allergies to anything.
Yeah.
Strangely enough, I have a nickel allergy, like the metal.
Oh, yeah, no, same, yeah. Actually.
Do you?
My armrest on my banjo, I had to get changed out to a wooden one because it kept giving me a rash on my arm, and I could not figure out what was causing it for like a year.
Yeah.
I had to like... do a biopsy. I don't know if you can really see it, but there's like a scar on my arm.
Can't see it from here, no.
Oh yeah, it's like right there. Let's see if I can get it to catch. I don't know. Anyway,
I trust you.
There's a scar on my arm where they had to like do, like they were trying to do allergy testing to figure out what was causing it. And then I was like, oh my God, it's my banjo.
Damn.
Yeah,
the thing that
I feel you on that.
The thing that you're trying to make a living with is the thing that's killing you.
Yeah.
Damn. That's poetic.
Take what you love and let it kill you.
Yeah. Oh, there's something poetic about that. So
right?
I think, what was it? I think the reason I found out I had a nickel allergy was because I went to a Catholic school and we had a uniform, unfortunately. The whole thing was a mess. But the belt that you would get from the store for your uniform had a nickel belt buckle. The funny thing was, though, I'm not one of those cases. Like, I did have a little irritation around my waist, but where I get the worst of it is actually around my eyes. So funny enough,
from like touching it and then touching
from either touching it or just simply being in contact with it. Like I was told that other parts of my body could break out just from being exposed to it. So it was terrible. It was bad. It was bad. So it took a sec to like finally realize like what could it possibly be? And it was around the time that I didn't have to wear the uniform and the belt anymore. And I was good. And it was like, I wonder if this has anything to do with it.
Yeah.
And then just random things I would discover were nickel because I would have a reaction to it. One of my ex-girlfriends got me a necklace and I used to wear it religiously.
Oh, no.
And then eventually I started breaking out and I was like, I bet it's this necklace. I stopped wearing it anymore. I was totally fine.
Yep.
Totally fine.
Man, I got a friend down here who has some sort of metal allergy. I can't remember which one it ended up being, but he plays trumpet for a living and he had to start playing with gloves on. And then it was like also his mouthpiece. And I was like, what an unfortunate profession to be in to have that happen. Like at least with the banjo, that was a really easy swap just to switch out the materials of the armrest.
Yeah.
But like, the whole ass trumpet, bro.
Nah, that's bad.
I'm like, oh my God.
At that point, it's like, son, put it away. Nah, yeah. You're done.
Yeah. I think he was able to figure it out, but I'm like, I commend you for that. You're strong for that.
Same. Like, armrest on a banjo, that's easy. Playing the trumpet, like, ah.
Yeah, no.
This is so stupid, but what came into my head was Batman and Robin, latex lips, where Robin wore latex lips to prevent being hypnotized by poison ivy.
Yeah. Oh my God.
That was like, when I was little, I enjoyed a lot of the movie, but even like 7-year-old me was like, that's dumb. It was like, I know a lot of people shit on the movie, but like, even at that age, I'm like, that's just dumb.
Yeah. Anytime I think of Batman and Robin, I just automatically go to Mermaid Man and Barnacle Boy. Like that's, that's my speed, you know?
They are the best version by far.
Oh yeah.
By far.
10 out of 10.
Ernest Borgnine. There we go. Ernest Borgnine.
Our band just runs on SpongeBob quotes. Actually on the last tour, that was when Wendy's was doing the whole Krabby Patty thing and we stopped and got Krabby Patties.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the most American thing I think I've ever done in my entire life.
I will say I still watch so much SpongeBob. My girlfriend and I, like, if we just need something in the background, that's what we put on.
Best show ever made.
It's so good. Also, I don't know like how you feel about more recent episodes, especially since, you know, Steve Hillenburg and everything.
Yeah.
But you know, I think on Amazon, I think it only lets you go up to like season 8. Which is totally fine by me because I feel like after a while, after the movie, the quality declines a little bit. So,
they're just like, after season 8, it doesn't really count.
Well, you can purchase it, but it's like, I'm not over here going to purchase
that's
9 through whatever. I am very happy 1 through 7.
Yeah.
Okay, that Krabby Patty meal, I'm sorry. That was pathetic. At least in our area.
I'm not even gonna lie to you. I don't really drink, but for some reason, that was the one night of the tour. I was like, yo, band, is someone else down to drive? Because I accidentally had too much of this pumpkin beer and I kind of want another one. I'm already out, so I may as well just send it, you know?
Oh my God.
So I was kind of drunk and I got this Krabby Patty. I just remember everything fell out of it, and which is probably totally my fault, but.
No. I don't think so. No.
No?
No, because I don't know where you got your stuff from, but like here in New York, every Wendy's location that I went to, Ohio, okay. It was a piss poor job. It was a terrible, terrible promotion because you would think, hopefully they would give you a nice burger. They would do something special with the burger compared to something else they would have. They would give you a specialized bag or specialized containers. No, you got nothing. It was just Krabby Patty meal by name and nothing else. If anything, it was worse than grabbing like a Dave single. It was pathetic.
How do you really feel?
I'm mad. I'm very upset because It was such a wasted opportunity. But then at the same time, Burger King was doing their Addams Family promotion. They knew how to do it right. They had purple buns made out of purple potatoes.
What?
That was great. They had specialized bags. They had specialized containers. They had other fun promotional stuff along with it.
I missed this completely.
You missed that? It was the same time as the Krabby Patty meal.
Wow.
And I'm over here like, Wendy's, you so fumbled this. Like, this shouldn't have been so hard.
Yeah.
But you f***ed it up to such a level. I'm surprised. I'm blown away. I was so disappointed.
This might be one of the most passionate things I've seen you go off on. I've been following you for a while, too.
I appreciate the fact that you're following and everything. We haven't even started the official interview. Kat, we just need to have you as a recurring person, and we have Connor and Kat. Walsh Wednesday presents Connor and Kat, or Kat and Connor. I'll even put your name first.
Oh,
Go right ahead.
It's just a podcast. Welcome to the podcast.
Exactly. It's just going to be us, like, once a month or something.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Amazing.
I love this. I don't know how much fun you have on other interviews, but at least I know I'm having so much fun with you.
Oh, my God.
It's only your second time.
They're all just different. Everyone's got kind of a different style and a different energy, but I am thoroughly enjoying myself.
Nice. We are about 24 minutes in. We probably should do the interview. However, probably a lot of this we'll probably throw it in somehow, some way.
Yeah.
I'll edit it, or
it's so funny.
It is so funny. I did put some of the stuff that wasn't the interview on my Patreon. I have some behind the scenes stuff too.
Oh, that's awesome.
No, but I don't know. Some of this is too good though. I don't know. So one of my best friends and I, we were saying, it's like, yo, we should have like a segment of a podcast of our own, you know, because the stuff that we say is just hilarious and fun. And that's what all friends say to each other.
Yeah.
And we tried recording it and listening back. It was cringy. It was terrible. It was like, anytime
I listen to demos, oh my God, like I feel that. I feel that in my bones.
Yes. Oh my God. I was recording a demo probably like 2 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And I was just so disappointed in myself. I'm like, I have to put this down for a second. I can't continue on. I'm hurting myself if I continue. I went back to it a couple days later. It's like, okay, I feel better. I can do this. But
yeah.
Oh God. Yeah.
You do hit that wall though.
Yeah.
And the second day test is real.
It's real. No, 100%. I don't even say second day test. Like, I give it a week sometimes.
Yeah.
I have to like wait a week before I can be like, is this actually good? You know, because the adrenaline's going, your mind is like, oh my God, I'm making something fantastic. But like, just to be able to step back and be like, okay, am I actually making something of worth here? And
was actually one really nice thing about working on this last record, Sprinter, because I was going back and forth between Florida and Asheville, North Carolina, so much.
Mm-hmm.
And working with another touring musician, our schedules were insane. And so there were a couple times where we would go months between the sessions just because I was on tour, he was on tour, we couldn't get together, blah, blah, blah. And at first I was kind of like, dang, I wish we could get done. And then as I settled into that pace, I was like, actually, this is a luxury right now to be able to sit between the sessions with this much space and come into each one totally fresh again.
Mm.
And I do think both of us benefited from having that. Like, is it kind of annoying in the whole, like, for the whole project time frame to get stretched out? Yeah, a little bit, depending on how you're looking at it. But from a creative standpoint, that was invaluable. It was really, really cool to be able to have that space.
I'm sure, because I know in moments where I've had a moment to sit on it, or like I'll just be driving in the car and be like, oh, you know what? This would be great to add, or, oh, you know, let's do this or something like that. I remember my last full length album. I put it out in 2022, but, you know, we were working on it. It was the pandemic. What were we going to do? So everybody's separated and far away from each other. So it's a matter of, it's like, all right, when am I going to get these files? When am I going to get these files? How's this going to work? But the fact that it was so stagnated, I was able to come up with all these ideas that I probably wouldn't have come up with prior. If I'm just like rushing, or not rushing, but if things were a lot more sequential, I may not have come up with some of the things that I really, really love about it. So I feel you on that.
Yeah. Yeah. And also when you're not as worried about like studio times and studio rates, when you're just working on a project as a whole and you let the song take you through a couple different turns, and sometimes you turn back the other direction after you've gone down this road for a minute. That can be an extremely stressful situation if you're not working with the right people, when you realize that you've kind of gone down a rabbit hole that you I won't say that you shouldn't have, but one that you realize wasn't the final destination.
Yeah.
That can be very uncomfy.
No, I hear you
God
on that.
God bless Mike for loving that part of the process. He embraced that with open arms, and that made
good.
It a lot more fun. Yeah.
That makes a big difference when you have people that can go along with it big time. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is probably a good spot, since we are about 30 minutes in, to actually get into everything, but to continue a lot of what you're saying anyway. But of course, we'll focus on May 8th, the show, talk about the album. Definitely want to talk about the success that you had with the Kickstarter. I was following along that whole
journey.
Yeah. So that was fun, just, you know, as a fan being like, oh, this is cool. I'm loving all the updates, loving everything. And
thank you.
Yeah, from there, I don't know if there's anything else in particular. That's all Julie gave me, and that's all I was thinking of. How are you? Anything else I should keep in mind? Or
trying to think if anything else. I mean, we have like a handful of other show dates that have kind of cropped up in. Mm-hmm. We're working on a lot of stuff right now, but I don't think probably anything that's worth promoting yet, because it's not like done.
Yeah, no worries, understandable. Yeah. All right, so let's officially get into this. But this is, I know. Yep.
Welsh Wednesday, take one, here we go.
Here we go, make it official. Ah. Hey there and welcome. God damn it, Kat.
Sorry. It would have been too easy.
It would have been too easy. Oh, God. All right, here we go. There we go.
Is that from High School Musical?
I'm glad you picked up on it. Nobody does. I'm so glad that you picked up on it.
Theater kid.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Ryan and Sharpay.
Oh, my God. That's fantastic.
Another blast from
never
the past
change.
There. No, no. There we go. All right. Hey there, and welcome back to Welsh Wednesday. God damn it, even that's too funny. I'm sorry.
I was just trying to keep myself.
I know. All right.
Okay. Oh my God.
No, I'm kidding.
We both had the same idea.
Oh my God. All right, and cut. This is just, all right, see you.
All right,
everybody.
We're done. No. Thanks, Julie.
Oh, God. She'll be so upset with us. It'd be like.
I feel like she would just be like, Kat, listen.
She'll be also like with me. It's like, Connor, come on. I've sent you how many people? It's like, what is this? What are you doing here? It's like,
it's probably Kat's fault, right?
No, it is not your fault. It's like, it's just when you get the right vibes, the right energy going.
You know.
I'm having a lot of fun. All right, here we go. All right.
One episode later.
Of course. And just like last time, we have to do the sign off. So.
Yeah.
Yes. So I'm Connor. I'm Kat. As always, we're glad we get to spend some time. So Kat, spend some time again. Oh, we can even include Wilson.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yep. On. There we go. You can say Kat and Wilson when it's time. There you go.
Okay, cool.
Here we go. Just give it a pause. Hold on. Don't give it a pause. I'm going to give it gallery. There we go. Now, because sometimes there's a lag, it gets weird. Okay, here we go. Come on, Wilson. Show your face, buddy. Show your face. There we go. I'm Connor.
I'm Kat. This is Wilson.
And as always, we're glad we get to
spend some time.
Good boy, Wilson. That was actually perfect. Good boy, Wilson.
He's so good.
You are a trained actor. You know exactly what you're doing.
He's like,
it's like, what did I do?
He's just slumped right now.
It's like, I don't want to be. I just slump.
For real.
Oh my gosh.
He's definitely been acting like he wants something, and I'm like, I was trying to keep him quiet.
Hey, he was pretty good. He was a good boy.
He was pretty good. There were a couple times you might hear some weird stuff in the background. Sorry about that.
It's not bad. Trust me, I've had worse. I remember doing like radio interviews where like something is howling or doing something in the background. Hell, even like having like kids in the background, it was just like, ugh, very loud. Yeah. Very, very loud. Nothing against kids, nothing against pets, but like sometimes it's like, you in a like a echo chamber or something? Like what's going on?
No kidding. Well, he can get loud.
Let's get loud. Let's get loud.
I'm glad he was good.
No, but that was good. Let's see. When am I? I know I'm going to get this in before the show. I'm just trying to remember which date I have this locked in for.
Ooh, that's a Julie question.
I think. No, that's a me question when I have to get this in.
Oh, true. Okay. I was going to say, no.
Probably. Yeah, I think I have it in the 30th. It's not loading right now. Hold on. I would imagine I have it down for the 30th. Because I would hate to do it just the day before, because that doesn't give you enough time for promotion.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I'm going to, 30th. So we'll have it out for the 30th. So it gives you a little bit more than a week. I'll be posting like Reels, TikToks, etc., just like last time. So
yeah, I mean, you do a great job with that, by the way. I know I messaged you about that, but you crushed that. Thank you.
If I didn't do that, I would not have the response that I do have.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of work. It is absolutely a lot of work. I've tried using some of those AI programs to kind of chop it up for me, but then every time that I would look into it, I would have to fix a lot of the mistakes or things just that I preferences, or it's like at this point I just need to edit myself. And then I did have one of those posting softwares where it just links all of your social media and you just post and it'll schedule out for you. The one that I was using kept crashing all the time, so it's like, what's the point of me paying for this if it's not even going to work and I'm just going to have to go back to all the other ones anyway? So I would say I spend the most time on the social media management than anything else by far.
Too, honestly. That's the stuff that kills me time-wise.
It does.
Yeah. People don't realize how time-consuming that really is.
Big time.
Yeah. I know the three platforms I've heard of were Hootsuite, Meltwater, and Later.
I don't know any of those.
Yeah, check those out. I think Meltwater is the nicest one that's like more current.
So what is that for exactly?
So those are like, you can upload stuff and schedule posting to happen.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. And they'll post natively to each platform, which is really nice. Yeah,
that's like what I used to have. I used Unum. That was the name of it.
Okay.
UNUM. And it was one of those things, like, it was amazing when it worked.
Yeah.
But the problem was it just crashed way too often.
Yeah. Hootsuite, Meltwater, and Later. Those are the three I've heard of / used.
Okay.
I might
look into them. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they're like subscription based. You might have to pay for them. I don't know. I have not checked into this in a long time. So
I had to pay for Unum. So yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was like one of those things like, all right, if I can pay for this, but it frees up my time to help me make more money, then sure.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
In the end, it was costing me more than it was saving me. So
that's annoying.
That's why, just like what you were saying about like bringing on the right people, also making sure that you invest in the right tools as well, because it's one thing if you get a tool that you think's going to work, but it ends up costing you more than it's saving you. It's like, then that's not the tool to have.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel your pain on that.
Yeah. Kat, I've kept you for like an hour and a half. Like,
no worries.
Thank you so much for your time. Unfortunately, I have to run, but like,
I feel you.
Thank you so, so much again. Thank you for being here and just being such a great guest. Like, I know this is only the second time, but still, like, each time has been so fun. So thank you
so much. I really appreciate it. That was a great conversation. And yeah, again, really appreciate you having me. But I won't hold you. I will catch you on the next one, and I'll see you in just a couple weeks.
Yeah, a couple weeks. I'm excited. Unless some freak of nature thing happens, I am definitely planning on coming down. So
heck yeah. See you then.
All right, Kat. See you later.
Bye.
Bye. And that's a wrap on this week's episode. Much love to our sponsors this week, Impact PR and Communications, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County, Bowman Wash Car Wash, Walsh Valuation, and Day Rock. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon. You can support this channel by becoming a Patreon member with memberships as low as $5 a month. With that, you can get behind-the-scenes content, your name featured in the credits of each episode, and access to the Spend Some Time chat. You can find that and more by scanning the QR code on your screen or by going to the links in the description. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, and I'm glad we get to spend some time.